What's the biggest emotional driver in a human being that causes them to want to change? It's pain or the fear of future pain?
Is training what you did or is training what you do? That's a quote by my next podcast guest, a man called Jeremy Miner. Sales isn't a numbers game, it's a skills game. Jeremy talks to me over Zoom on the Stephen Sully Study about sales, the mindset of a salesperson, and more importantly, the art of communication. Be happy, never content, and make sure you're subscribing. Before we start this week's podcast, I have to give a special mention to our sponsors. iSecure Vehicles. They are a brilliant company, a family-run business, and they specialize in vehicle safety and security throughout the UK. I know this company very well, and I also know the people behind the brand. If you've been following me on my podcast journey and on social media, you will know that I love cars and so does my network. This is why I'm very, very excited to be working with iSecure Vehicles, and this is why we have chosen them to be our sponsors for the Stephen Sully Study podcast. Their team are professionals, experts, and they're efficient. Once their product is installed on your car, your vehicles, you will have the peace of mind that your asset is protected. Trust me, do not wait until it's too late. Get protection now. For more information about their products, including dash cameras, undetected immobilizers, and also car tracking systems, head over to isecure-vehicles.co.uk. And remember to mention the Stephen Sully Study podcast sent you. Right, welcome back to the podcast, Stephen Sully Study. I'm here doing a podcast over Zoom in Mayfair, London at our gallery, Woodbury House. And I got a guy that I've been following for some time now. So this is someone that has definitely been giving me an education without him realizing. And someone's given me a lot of inspiration in recent months. So Jeremy Miner, thank you very much for your time. And I'm looking forward to this podcast interview with you.
Stephen, thanks for having me on your show. Where would you like to start? Let's roll.
Okay. So I know you are the chairman of Seventh Level. Can you quit?
Well, there's been an update. I'm no longer the chairman of Seventh Level. I am only the founder. So we brought in a new chairman. I am no longer the chairman. I have nothing. I'm just the founder of Seventh Level. I'm just the boring training guy.
Okay. So regardless of your position, what is Seventh Level?
Seventh Level, we're a global sales training firm, and typically, we train anywhere from Fortune 500. We actually have two Fortune 100 clients now, but typically anywhere from Fortune 500 down to SMB, down to individual salespeople selling anything. And we typically, clients come to us because they're concerned about, maybe losing sales to low cost competitors. Maybe they're worried about, them or their teams not hitting quota consistently. And a lot of times, especially companies come to us because they're frustrated by the attrition of losing salespeople because they just don't feel like their salespeople are picking up and how to sell and position their products and services to their clients the right way. So typically that's why clients come to us, train them how to sell more of their thing.
Understood. Now, clearly doing research on you, Jeremy, looking at the accolades, your success, obviously you made a ton of money. You've really got a good brand around you. You've been featured in Forbes, Wall Street Journal, US Today. You've got this great sales company. You've got a great audience now on social media. This doesn't happen by chance. So how did this all come about, and how did you find the world of selling?
Well, so two questions. So how did Seventh Level start? So I started Seventh Level late 2018. It was me and my assistant. I'd already been retired for about a year. I had a 17-year sales career, did somewhat, decent, as most people would say, with what I earned. And so I started Seventh Level, me and my assistant, in 2018, started growing it. And then we really hit stride in 2020. Now we have over 150 some staff members on the team. You know, 4 years ago, we had two. So basically, there's two reasons. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but the two main reasons that I feel like we've been able to scale, and we're still scaling, we're by no means where we will be in 5 or 10 years. But the big thing is your content has to be really, really good, and it has to get results for your clients. If your content is good, which means like really good, I wouldn't even say good, it has to be great. Your content has to be great, and it has to get crazy results for your clients. When you have that, word spreads, right? That's the first thing. The second thing is you have to get yourself out there on social media, okay? You know, almost 2 years ago, it'll be two years ago starting in January. This is not very long ago. I didn't even have an Instagram account. You might not even know that. So 2 years ago in January is the first time I did the first reel, okay? And now we do about 100, and I think it's 180 reels a month just on Instagram. We do the same amount on TikTok, Facebook. We do YouTube shorts now and LinkedIn. 2 years ago, we didn't have any of that. So because of those reels, that Instagram account alone grew from zero followers to, what do we have now? I think, let me look, 558,000 followers in less than 2 years, about 21 months, okay? So doing that, doing those reels, you might see our Facebook ads everywhere now. Facebook pretty much dominate on Facebook ads and Instagram ads. We're now starting to get really big in YouTube, starting that process. That has really pushed our brand out. And, you know, we have over 18,000 testimonials in the last 3.5 years. So you get really, really crazy results. Your content's really great. You get it out on social media so people know who you are. It's pretty hard not to be successful at that point.
True, true. I found via your content, your book, The New Model of Selling to an Unsellable Generation. And I found it pretty eye-opening. I'll tell you why.
Well, yeah.
I think I found you for two reasons. Or you resonated with my mindset for two reasons. One, because of your content, which you just covered.
Yeah.
But two, everything that I felt I knew as a salesperson, I'm 37 years of age, Jeremy. Yeah.
Okay.
And I got into sales about 19, 20 years of age.
Okay.
And after about 5 years, it's not like I felt like I knew everything, but after about 5 or 6 years, you get a level of success. And then as a young alpha male, you get a bit of an ego, and therefore you start walking around that you can walk on water, right? And everything that you were saying in your book and your content, YouTube videos or your reels, was almost the opposite to what I was taught.
Sure.
And funny enough, being in the art market now for 10 years,
yeah,
I realized that your philosophy, your approach to this market is so compatible to what I do here as a business. And it just started clicking. So tell me about this book first of all, and people that haven't read it, why should they invest into this book, Jeremy?
Well, it's a big investment. I know, $17, but it's a tactical book. You know, when I was growing up in the world of sales, you know, I read a lot of books. If you don't know, ever since my first sales training seminar I ever went to when I just barely turned 22, I went to a Brian Tracy seminar. Are you familiar with Brian?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, most people are later in sales, right? He's wrote in 50 some books or whatever. So I remember going to that seminar, and one thing he said that day, like, completely changed everything for me. He said, use your car as a university on wheels. And quite literally from that day, like, I don't listen to the radio. And now some people might think I'm crazy. Why don't you listen to music? Look, if you want to listen to music, have a cheat day, you know, like a food day where you just eat a bunch of pancakes. You can have a cheat day on Saturday where you just listen to your favorite Taylor Swift songs or whatever you listen to, which, by the way, how much money does that make you every month? Zero bagels. So I decided that I was going to use my vehicle to educate myself in the world of professional sales. Now, my background in college was behavioral science and human psychology. Probably had an unfair advantage because I learned how the human brain makes decisions. How does somebody say yes compared to why does somebody say no, right? So there's a lot more to that. But what I found in all those books I read, so since I heard Brian say that, I started to read and or listen to 5 books a month times 60 books a year. That's on sales, persuasion, and influence, not Harry Potter, even though Harry Potter's cool, okay? But on sales, persuasion, and influence, because that was my profession. I needed to get good at it. And I did that for the last 23 years. Now, a lot of people are, because that's like, if I do the math, that's like 1,000, could be wrong, 1,300 some books, okay? That's not even courses. I've gone through like 350 plus sales training courses during that time as well. And a lot of people ask me, how do you have time to do that and work? Like, it doesn't make any sense. I don't read 5 books a month. I typically listen to about 3 a month driving around in my car. Okay. I only read about 2, but I listen to about 3 on average. All right. Or I listen or watch 3 courses while I'm driving around. A lot of people think that to go through sales training courses or read, they need to sit in front of a computer or sit down for 2 hours in the morning. You waste so much time driving to work, listening to music or talk radio or, you know, politics, which doesn't make you anything, obviously, right? Or like if I'm ironing my freaking shirt in the morning, I've got 4 minutes, I can plug in my headphones, turn on my phone, and I can go through a course for 4 minutes. And then I plug that course into my phone and listen to it while I'm driving to the chiropractor for 8 minutes. And then on the way back, I can listen to it another 8 minutes. And now all of a sudden, I've got 20 minutes of learning just in that first hour of my day, right? So there's always time. So I've always done that since I was 21 years old. And because of that, obviously, I learned a lot, especially being in the trenches. And I applied what I learned from my background in behavioral science and human psychology and all the books, all the courses I went through. And that's what we have today now is our methodology, neuro-emotional persuasion questioning came from what I've always learned and continue to learn. A lot of people say, why do you keep learning? Well, I don't, you know, the biggest thing that holds a sales professional back or a business owner is like you said, when you got after about 5 or 6 years, you thought you knew everything, right? So you have this ego, like, I know everything. I know I don't need to know anything more about selling. And because of that, you stop learning. And when you stop learning, what happens to your skill level? It just decreases. Like, you're never going to stay at the same level if you go down. So like right now, I'm going through an advanced body language course by a gentleman that trains advanced body language to, you know, members of the EU, you know, politicians over in Europe. He specializes with Fortune 100 CEOs. And I'm going through that course right now, even though I know a ton about body language and a lot of what he trains, I already know, but there's been a few gems. I'm like, that's an interesting way he put that there. When I'm speaking on stage, I need to have my hands more here rather than out here because that signifies more openness. Little things like that. That you just do, you tweak, and it just takes you to maybe another little level up. And maybe as a salesperson, you make an extra $2,000 a month from that. And then maybe you start going through this book. And going back to your question, I think I ran about. The reason why I wrote this book is because I wanted to have a book that was more tactical. Most sales books you've ever read, there's not a lot that you really learn from it. It's more theory, and you probably read the same thing, and they just say it like 7 different ways. Possibly right with that. So when Jerry and I wrote this book, we wanted to have like tactical questions in this book that salespeople from any industry could actually use and apply to what they sell. Now, are you going to learn advanced tonality, advanced body language in a book? Well, how could you, right? You can't hear your voice. So that's not taught, but there's different questions and really why you're asking them in this book. So that's a good place to start, but realize a book, is it going to make you wealthy? Probably not. Because how much of this book are you going to remember within about 48 hours? 19%, according to the way your brain works. How much are you going to remember in a week? Less than 9%. How much are you going to remember in a month? Less than 3%. So a book is a good place to start, but don't expect to like triple your sales from reading a book. You got to go through courses where you can hear the tone, see the body language, those type of things. Hopefully that answers your question in a really long format.
It definitely does. Funny enough, I mentioned just before we kicked off, I've got a gym at home and I've got 2 TVs up there and I always put on something educational, inspiring, and something that's going to help me learn and improve. And I had on literally on Monday morning, Brian Tracy, and it was a new video that was uploaded on one of these YouTube channels. And he said one thing on there, which is something I learned from him and then kind of listened to when I came across your content, which is when you're listening to music, it's basically like chewing gum for the brain. You're not really going to be upgrading yourself by doing that. Of course, there's a time and place for it. Maybe if you're, I know, going to the boxing gym and you're having a spar or something, but bar that, it is just chewing gum for the brain. And that really kind of resonated with me, and I'm glad you mentioned that. When I finished your book, funny enough as well, The Law of Attraction or Coincidence, you made a post and you put up on Instagram, you or your team or your stunt double, put up some of the books that you recommend. And I'm just going through this at the moment.
It's a good book, yeah.
Which is a really, really, really good book. And I've listened to Chris Voss's podcast, Master at Tonality, and I really do believe that listening to your content and many others, tonality is absolutely key.
Your tonality is the key to you making the sale or not making the sale, because what most salespeople don't realize, because you're reading books, like any of these books, most of these books behind me, you know, 7 out of 10 will say that the sale is made. 71 or 73% of the sale is made by your verbal or nonverbal skills. But they don't teach you how. Most salespeople wouldn't even know what that meant, right? The sale is really made by how your tonality comes across, because your prospect, that's how they interpret the intention behind every question you ask, right? So if you have just a regular monotone voice, there's no interpretation of that. It's just boring. Now, I don't mean be way enthusiastic and way sleazy, like excited, like most people would look at a salesperson being, because there's certain questions that are going to require more of a curious tone. John, walk me through. What are you guys doing now for XYZ? See, that's a curious tone. That signifies that you are curious, causes the prospect to interpret you're curious, so they open up more. There's other questions, believe it or not, where you're going to use more of a confused tone. Oh, hold on. I'm not understanding. How did you mean by X? See, that's a confused tone. Now, why would I use a confused tone when I'm clarifying and probing? Because that confused tone signifies that they need to clarify further what they just said. So if they start talking to you about some problem or challenge or issue they're having, what do you want them to do? You don't want to just, oh, okay, that sucks, and then go to your next surface level question. You want to help them relive that experience, relive that pain, because that drives change. What's the number one emotional driver in a human being that causes them to want to change? It's pain, or the fear of future pain. So if you can't help them relive their pain, if you can't help them feel that there could be future pain, they don't feel the urgency to want to change. And if they don't feel the urgency to want to change, guess what? There is no sale, right? That's why you get, I want to think it over. If you're selling B2C, I need to talk with my spouse. If you're selling B2B, I need to keep researching. I need to get more quotes. That's why you get that, because you don't know how to get them to feel pain, relive pain, or the fear of future pain. So pain always drives change. You always got to remember that. So that's why that confused tone causes them to elaborate on that pain. And they interpret like, oh, he didn't understand what I'm saying. I need to say it in a different way. Does that make sense?
Definitely.
Now, there's other questions that require more of a challenging or skeptical tone. What if you don't do anything about this? Like, what happens at that point? See, that's a challenging tone, okay? There's other questions that require more of a concern tone, you know, a tone that shows more empathy. What's really holding you back? See, that's a concerned tone. They interpret that I'm concerned for their situation, which causes them to open up more emotionally, because it builds trust. So those are examples of the four C's of tone. There's also more tone that's more of a playful tone. Let's say if I'm selling insurance and the prospect says, you're the fifth person that called me this week. You mean you don't like getting 1 million phone calls a week? That's a playful tone. Yeah, I hate that. But, you know, see, triggers them. You're playful. That's a playful tone. So there's different versions of tone that you have to learn for different parts of your sales process that cause the prospect to emotionally open up. That's really where the sale's made. I could take the worst script on the planet and use the right tone and outsell anybody in that company 3-1 just by my tone with horrible questions.
is totally, totally, totally relevant and so powerful. Jeremy, I'm going to throw a couple of things at you.
Throw them.
And then I'm going to ask you why these don't work.
Yeah.
Being excited, enthusiastic, tie downs, get a yes, force a yes.
You want to do one at a time?
Well, I was going to say to you, why don't these old methods work? And I won't mention the guy's name, but there used to be a guy who was a little bit older than me, 5, 6, 7 years older than me, and he'd done timeshare, he had worked around the world, he worked in every sort of different sales markets out there. He could speak about 3 or 4 different languages. He had made a lot of money, and his morning meetings were really powerful. He used to get a lot of the guys and some females, but mostly guys, up and ready to attack the day. He installed a lot of energy into us. And he always used to lead by saying, you must have the 3 E's, energy, enthusiasm, and excitement. And I kind of lived by that for my whole entire sales career. But the moment I started reading through your content and watching your YouTube videos, I actually realized that the 3 E's were probably losing me a shit ton of sales.
Well, that's why you're playing the numbers game.
so why forcing the, let's look at the energy and excitement and also tying someone down to yes. Yeah.
I feel like it's good to have good energy. There's nothing wrong with having good energy, but when you show so much external enthusiasm, then that's different. You should be excited about what you sell. But just because you're excited about what you sell and you believe in the product, how does that mean the prospect is going to believe in it just because you believe in it? Think about all the salespeople that approached you, Steve, that were really excited about what they were selling and really enthusiastic. Did that make you really excited? Oh, wow, I'm so excited. I must get it because they're so excited about this thing they're trying to sell me. Is that the reaction you got? You probably put your guard up. You're probably like, whoa, right? Because how does society view salespeople in general? At a lower status, even if they make a ton of money, they view you as a lower status. So how can we believe that just because we're really enthusiastic to them about a car or a life insurance policy or whatever we sell, cybersecurity, that somehow magically it's going to cause them to be excited? Now, that doesn't mean be boring. But you're right in the middle. You need to come across more neutral, more unbiased. Like you're not quite sure you can help yet. You don't know enough details about what's going on, which causes the prospect to let their guard down. Because what do we do as a human being with the moment we feel like we're being sold to? What do?
Close up.
The guard comes up and we emotionally shut down. And that enthusiasm triggers that reaction, right? So when we come across too excited, that, like I said, that does not mean be boring. We're more in the middle. We're more an expert. How do experts come across? They come across assertive. They come across confident. And they come across neutral because they don't need your business. They already have a lot of clients because they're able to get them results, right? They're sought after. They're wanted. If you read Chris Voss's book, he'll tell you the same thing. You come across way too excited. Typically, your prospect's going to emotionally close down. So when you ask questions, did you ever notice in the past? Now, you got a lot of sales. It doesn't mean it doesn't work at all, but you're just losing a lot of deals you could have made, right? But when you ask questions, did you ever notice that a lot of times when you ask good questions, the prospect would just give you vague, generalized, surface level answers? Yeah, well, that's because they emotionally shut down because we triggered sales resistance. So when we come across aggressive, when we come across too excited, when we come across needy, when we come across attached. So if we come across way too excited, that means we're attached. It triggers the human brain to actually go into what's called fight or flight mode. So you ever heard of fight or flight mode?
Of course, yeah.
I think most salespeople don't understand that it's not the prospect that's doing that. It's what we're saying and how we're coming across that's triggering that reaction in their brain. It's actually triggered in what's called the reptilian part of your brain, your survival part of your brain, okay? Mm. That enthusiastic pitch. So what happens is that's why when you cold call, like, oh, no, we're good. We're not interested. And they didn't even hear what you said, right? Or if you ask some questions after you're really excited about, you know, you get on Zoom and you ask some questions You ever notice they're like, hey, enough with the questions. Can you just tell me how much it's going to cost? And I'll tell you if I'm interested. That's because it's a triggered reaction based on your tone coming across too excited. But if I, when I learn how to come across, like I said, more unbiased, more neutral, like I'm not quite sure we can help, especially in the beginning. That doesn't mean at the end, right? You'd be more assumptive at that point. But when we come across more neutral, more collective, more calm, it triggers their brain to become curious enough where they want to engage because they feel like you might have something important to them. So enthusiasm, the concept that enthusiasm sells is not based in reality, especially in our day and age where prospects feel like they're being sold to all the time by marketing, social media, salespeople. And so they're going to react to that in too enthusiastic and stay surface level. You want to be more in the middle, more like an expert is, more like a trusted authority. And that causes them to let their guard down. Because if their guard's down, is it easier to sell to somebody that their guard's down compared to being up? I think Absolutely. We all know the answer to that. So what was the next question? You said something about a tie down. What did you mean by a tie down?
Guys, I wanted to hop on here to once again thank the sponsors of this week's podcast, iSecure Vehicles. When we were searching around for sponsors for the channel, we honestly wanted to get a brand, a company that would give massive amount of value to our audience, and that is definitely iSecure Vehicles. They have a wide range of products which are designed to keep your vehicle, your asset, safe and secure. Some of those products are dash cameras, undetected immobilizers, and car tracking systems. Head over to iSecure to look at their products and make sure you say that the Stephen Sully Study podcast sent you there. Well, I was always taught from previous sales companies I worked for when I was younger that if you get a lot of yeses out of a prospect or a potential client, they're more likely to say yes to the bigger thing at the end. So for example, if you're trying to sell a £100,000 painting, for example, the more mini yeses you get, the more likely that you are to get it at the end.
Did they ever show any data or like evidence of that?
Absolutely not.
It's just made up. It's actually copied from a book that came out in the 1940s that most sales trainers have just copied and pasted. And it was a study by a sales training company that did their own internal study, which nobody really knows if that was really accurate or not. Now, it doesn't mean that getting yeses are not good, but it doesn't mean that, you know, if you get seven yeses, you're 71%. Like, there's no data that actually shows that, okay? Especially if the prospect feels like the questions you're asking them are forcing them to say yes, they will shut down. There's certain questions you ask where you want them to actually say no, that will actually get you to the yes. You know, even I think Chris even talks about that. The reason why Chris understands that is because he understands the brain. He understands buying behaviors like I would from our background in behavioral science. So I might say, let's say if I'm cold calling, and at the end of that cold call, I might be, would you be opposed to having a conversation around that? Now, why would I want the prospect to say no? No, I'm not opposed. I don't want them to say yes. That's why I wouldn't say, would you be open? Because on a cold call, what is the human brain already pre-programmed to say? The word what? No. So I want them to say no because that leads to yes. Would you be opposed to talking about that? No, I'm not opposed. What do you have in mind? It's hard for them to say, yes, I'm opposed. So there's certain questions where you actually want them to say no because it actually leads to a yes, as an example. There's a lot more to that, but just there's no evidence that getting them to say yes seven times gives you a 71% more chance. It doesn't hurt, but there's no evidence that shows, oh, I got them to say yes nine times. Why didn't they buy? What's going on? Well, there's no evidence that, especially if you're manipulating them to get them to say yes.
Agreed. Jeremy, let's talk about numbers. When you was at your height of your sales career, how much was you earning?
So I made a little bit under $33 million in straight commissions during my 17. It was about a 17 and a half year sales career, almost 18 years. They never say that 17. It's almost 18 years. My best years, I was earning between 2.4 and 2.9 million a year in straight commissions. That was about 9-10 years or so in I was in four different industries. The last three industries, I made over seven figures a year in those industries, especially the last three. I was making multiple seven figures a year. So my best years, I was making about 2.4 to 2.9 million a year in straight commissions. Unfortunately, no salary. That would have been cool.
And a question that probably a lot of people wonder about is that was kind of the end result per se, but how long did it take you to start earning from the moment you became a straight commission only salesperson, real significant money? Let's call it 10, 15, 20,000 a month.
Yeah. So my first job, my first four years, that was when I was in college. I was like 21, 22, and I started in door-to-door home security. And those are summer programs where you only work 4 months during the summer because they send you out during college. So you go to school the other 8 months, but from May to the end of August, that's when you sell door-to-door. So during those summers, I was making a little bit over $100,000 a month, but it was only 4 months. So I'd make a little bit over 400 grand for the summer, and then I would go to college for the rest of the year, which is their story. When you're going to college, you're as a 21 or 22 year old, and you're making like 400 grand, and the professor that's teaching you like pre-algebra, because my brain doesn't work with math, was making like 60. It's hard to comprehend that, but that's a whole nother story. So I was already making 100,000 a month then, but you're only working 4 months, right? So then when I got into my next career over the next 5 years, I sold B2B debt relief services to some enterprise, but mainly SMB type of companies. And after my first year, I think I made close to 700,000 in commissions, American. And then my next year, that's when I finally got over 1 million. I made like 1.3 million. Then I went to 1.7, then I went to 2.1. And then I got into a new career, B2C network marketing. That first year I did a little bit over 1 million because it takes a while to build that up. And then for the next 4 years, I made well over 2.5 million a year. And then my last job, I got into selling like high-end investment conferences that were anywhere from 30 to 100 grand. And each of those last 4 years, I was making close to $3 million a year in commission. So four completely different industries, two B2C. That's kind of where it happened. It takes a while to learn those skills. And I'm still learning as right now. I'm still always acquiring new skills for our clients, for sure.
It's clear to see through the way you're talking and the content in the books and stuff that giving value to your customers, to your audience is really, really important. And learning new skills all the time, that's at the forefront of your mindset.
100%.
But a question I need to ask you, Jeremy, because when I got into sales, it was kind of asked to me when I was a young kid, I guess. How important is making a lot of money to you and your family?
Like what, as a salesperson or now?
Yeah, as a salesperson.
I mean, here's the way I always looked at it. And here's how we always talk to salespeople. You're already going to work 40 to 50 hours a week, right? Mm. So if you're already going to be working 40 to 50 hours a week, why not make more money during the 40 to 50 hours a week? Now, how are you going to make more money? Okay. You know, a lot of sales are like, I want to triple my sales. And I'm like, great. So how are you going to triple your sales? Like literally, how are you going to do that? Are you going to triple your working hours? You already work 8 to 10 hours a day. You can't work 24 to 30 hours a day. There's no such thing. So if you want to triple your sales, what are you going to have? The only thing you can do is what? You have to triple your sales ability. You have to learn a much higher level of sales ability than what you currently have been trained if you want to make that type of money. Everybody always asks me, Jeremy, I need to get in those industries you sold in so I can make more money. I'm like, well, you can, but the industry doesn't have anything to do with it. I was like, you know, the first industry, door-to-door home security systems, where I was making 100 grand a month in, you know what the average person made? Mm-hmm. 5 grand a month. So they were making five. How was I making over 100? Same industry, same people I was talking to. No, what was the difference, right? The second industry where I was in B2B debt relief service, where I was making 200,000 a month. What did the average salesperson make? Under 6,000 a month. Third industry, network marketing, considered the hardest industry for someone to succeed, where the average network marketer makes less than $200 a month. How was I making 220 to 250,000 a month? And my last industry, where I was making 240 to 260,000 every month, how was the average earner making less than 5 or 6 grand a month? See, it's not necessarily the industry. Now, Doesn't mean all the time. If you're selling a $5 magazine subscription or Girl Scout cookies door to door, you're probably not going to make that much money, right? Mm. Even if you have the best sales ability. But most industries, it's not the industry. Most of the time, it's your skill level. So when sales, I always find beef with sales trainers that say, hey, you heard this, right? See, I heard this when I was growing up in sales. Hey, selling is a numbers game. You just got to work harder. You got to get thick skin. You got to get used to the rejection. You got to call more people. You got to knock on more doors. You got to speak with more leads. And I thought to myself, how does that give me any competitive advantage? Like basically when a sales trainer says that, the way we interpret that is, hey, what I'm training you doesn't really work that well. So you're just going to have to work harder. You're just going to have to call more people. You're just going to work more hours. And I'm like, isn't that great of him or her to tell me that I just got to work 4 more hours a day? See, when we train salespeople, Steve, we're focused on the skills game. So rather than numbers game, imagine if companies knew how to train their salespeople to focus on their skills, their techniques, the quality of each conversation. And why are they losing this prospect that has problems that your solution can solve? What's the missing link? The missing link is what you're saying and what you're not asking. And you don't know how to use your tone to get them to let their guard down, that is causing them to run the other way, even though your solution solves their problems and can get them where they want to be. So what's a sport that you like to watch? Is it football over there?
Boxing.
Okay, boxing. Who's your favorite boxer?
Hard choice, but it's either Floyd Mayweather.
Okay, let's take Floyd.
Okay.
Where would Floyd Mayweather be if as a young boxer, his attitude was, hey, boxing, it's just a numbers game. I'm just going to swing and swing and swing, and hopefully I'll connect a punch and hopefully it works out for me. He'd be probably on the floor and never would have made it into professional ring. Now, Floyd knows that boxing is a what? A skills game. So he studies his opponent's moves. He knows where to go. He knows where to jab. He knows like what to do if he gets hit here, where to see. He's focused on the skill of every match, and that's why he beats everybody. Right. If I'm playing basketball, like if I'm, you know, Steph Curry, the guy that shoots all the 3-pointers over here for Golden State Warriors. Right. If he was like, oh, basketball, it's a numbers game. Just shoot it as many times as you can. Eventually it'll go in, you know, here and there. Well, he would have never went into the NBA. Right. No, he's working on his technique every day. His hand motions, the way he moves his hips. See, he's focused on his skill game. So imagine if salespeople focused on the words they were using. Imagine if they focused on, you know what, I think I need to reword some of my questions because they're not emotionally opening up my prospects. What if they focused on how to use their tone for different questions that got the prospect to let their guard down? What if they focused on learning how to prevent objections from happening in the prospect's brain rather than trying to react to an objection at the end? Can you imagine how much more money they would make? And most importantly, how many more people they could actually help get what they want? And that's how I always viewed sales, Steve, is it's my job. If the person does not buy, is it their responsibility or mine? I always looked at that's me. What did I say? What did I not ask? What did I cause them to feel uncertainty in their mind that caused them to not purchase what I'm offering, even though they have problems and my solution could have gotten them where they go. And when you start to take accountability that way and realize that it's you, the salesperson, and you can improve your skills drastically, it opens up a whole different opportunity for you as a salesperson that most salespeople just don't think they can even be at because they're brain fed that it's a numbers game. Crazy.
So you're not just a salesperson now, but that's obviously where you made your bulk of your money at the start. And now you pivoted into becoming a business person, an investor, public speaker, etc. So from a business person standpoint, okay, I'm interested to hear your view on this. What's more important, sales or marketing?
That's a tough question to ask. If I had to pick one, I'm going to say sales because you can learn how to cold call. But obviously both of them together make you unstoppable, right? Like our growth, you know, because we put out a lot of basic free content out there, right? We do 180 reels a month. You know, we're all over Instagram. We're all over Facebook. We're probably the biggest sales training company in the world on those two platforms from what we understand from just how much we spend and all that stuff that we do. But that's just basic content, right? Like our client virtual training platforms, that's where we actually train salespeople, everything from A to Z, right? But no one would know who we were if we didn't know how to market. If you can, you know, even, you know, Grant Cardone himself, we would probably have different ideology or methodology about how to communicate in the sales process, but he's a brilliant marketer, obviously, right? Great at real estate. He says it best. You can have the best product or service, but if nobody knows who you are, it doesn't really matter, right? Mm. So when you get out there and you learn how to market, it just opens everything up. You know, we were a pretty successful company before we started doing reels. Even the first 2 years of the business, pretty successful. And we weren't really out there on social media that much. We knew how to cold call. We knew how to get referrals. But the moment we got into social media, our sales went through the roof. You know, Selling Power Magazine, which ranks the, I don't know if you're familiar with them, they rank the top 20 sales training companies in the world every year based off two things: company revenue. So they have to go through your financials. You have to prove it. You can't pay to be on there. You have to prove your financials through your certified accountants. So here's our financials, our P&Ls and all that stuff. And then they go through your client testimonials. You know, last year we were ranked as one of the top 20 sales training companies in the world after 4 years. That would not have happened if we didn't have a big presence on social media. Every company on that list, every single company, were in business for at least 25 years. We were in business for four before we made that list. And actually a couple of the top companies, they've been around since the 1970s. But we just got big on social media. That's how we grew so fast and we got lots of results. So to answer your question, that's a hard one. I'm going to say they're both equally important. I'm going to play the politically correct answer and say they're both needed if you really want to scale your company.
Yeah.
But if I had to pick one to start making money, I would always say sales first, because you can have the greatest marketing in the world, but if you can't sell, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, we always used to say that over here we've got Yellow Pages. I don't know if you've got that over in the States.
We used to, the phone books, right?
Yeah. So we used to say even if everything collapsed, we would just jump into Yellow Pages and just start calling people.
Yeah, calling people, referrals, networking events. I mean, that's how we did business the first year and a half, really, right? And then once we got into social media, we now book over, it's like 4,500 to 5,000 sales calls a month just off our social media and our ads. That's a lot of sales calls for a sales training company. Booking 5,000 sales calls a month 4 years in is more than, 99% of the companies out there. But we're still learning. That's the thing. Like, we love learning, getting better, improving every week, every month, every year, you know?
Can I ask you this question? I don't know if you have been asked this before. Now, we clearly know that, you know, the old sales gurus were teaching a lot of young people. And I think the biggest detriment to sometimes those teachings, just like what I went through, is you do get a level of success and therefore you feel that what you were taught actually does work, and you kind of maintain that kind of mindset and philosophy. But then what kind of doubles down on it is when films come out like Boiler Room, Prime Gig, Wall Street, Glengarry Glen Ross, etc. And young salespeople, and I would say predominantly men, like young men, will look at them and kind of try and mimic not only the way they sell, but their lifestyles. How damaging, and how much money do you think young sales professionals have lost because of films like Boiler Room and Prime Gig?
Well, I think the biggest problems in sales, I always ask this question when I do a keynote, the biggest problem in sales is the problem that you don't know you have. Biggest problem in sales is just the problem you don't know you have. Because if you don't know you have a problem, you don't know what to do to change that problem, right? And if you get into sales, I was the same way. Now, fortunately for me, when I was learning traditional selling skills from the sales gurus, or maybe repackaged as consultative selling, at the same time I was in college. And like I said, my major is behavioral science, human psychology. So I was learning from my professors. You ever heard of Robert Cialdini?
Rings a bell, but I can't say.
Yeah, definitely. So he's the head of behavioral science at Arizona State University. He's world renowned, written books called Persuasion, Influence. That was one of my professors. I also studied a lot of online professors from Yale and Harvard on psychology and what's called social dynamics, like status ranking. How do you build status in a prospect's mind? It's called situational status. So I had that going on for me over here. And they were telling me the most persuasive way to communicate was here. The gurus in their books and programs were saying it was over here. Like you said, exact opposite. So I'm like, how do I take what I'm learning about how the brain makes decisions and wrap that into a sales process, the right questions, the right tone, body language, even if you're on the phone, because that affects your tone, right? And how do I do that? Once I learned that, everything changed. Now, I'm not saying, like you said, traditional selling skills, you can make money. You're just going to be capped, right? You're going to be capped because you have to play the numbers game. And eventually, you can't work 24 hours a day. And what do most salespeople, especially young guns, young guys, what do they go through after 2 years of that, 4 years of that, 6 years, 8 years of playing the numbers game? What do they do? They emotionally start to what? Burn out. Right?
Yeah.
And that's why sales has the what? Highest attrition in any industry. I think besides like police officers, I could be wrong, right? Because that emotional, like people don't like being rejected 90% of the time and have prospects treat them like dirt. Right. Eventually, it doesn't matter how thick your skin is. Eventually, you're going to get burned out and you want to get into management. Right. So if you play the numbers game, you can. You're just going to go through a lot of burnout and you're going to be capped at your commissions. Like when you got up to your highest level, did you wonder, like, how do I double that? Did you ever think like, OK, I'm making this, but I want to make double, like I can't work twice as many hours. I can't work 20 hours a day. So you're capped. Right. So with what we train salespeople, we train you how to get your prospects to let their guard down, emotionally open up, because when you have questions, it, just because they're great doesn't mean the prospect wants to tell you, right? Because if you don't know how to ask him with the right tone, they interpret it as what? Oh, he's just trying to ask me this question to get me to say an answer so he can sell me something, right? So once you learn how to get them to emotionally open up, because they feel like you're curious or you're concerned or you're confused, prospects feel like it's a natural conversation. They don't even feel like they're being sold to. I can't tell you how many prospects when I was in sales, I'm talking like 9 out of 10, at the end of that conversation or conversations, if I sold B2B, basically thanked me for letting them send money to me in the company to solve their problems and get what they want. They never felt like they were sold. See, and that's the problem with traditional selling skills is your prospects feel like you're trying to sell them. And when you feel like you're being sold, you do what? You emotionally shut down. And that's what you're competing against. So we've all been taught that you have to do all the work. You have to do all the selling. You have to do all the convincing. You have to overcome their objections. You have to chase. What we're training you is who has the problems? You or the prospect? The prospect. Who has the solution to solve those? You. You have to start acting like that. So we train salespeople how to get the prospects to do all the work, how to get the prospects to sell themselves, how to get the prospects to overcome their own objections, how to get the prospects to pull you in instead of you pushing and pressuring. When you learn how to do that, I know that's a broad overview, but when you learn how to do that, that takes the right questions, the right time, the right tone. Selling actually becomes very enjoyable and very easy because you view it as collaborating with the prospect, you and the prospect working together on the same team, helping them find problems that they didn't know they had and be able to solve those problems to get them where they want to go. When you start to view selling differently than you against the prospect, like Glenn Gary, Glenn Rosswood, or Wolf on Wall Street, like manipulating, high pressure, telling them why they should go with you, It just changes the whole ball game, and it's actually enjoyable. You don't have to go to bed on Friday night after you've made some sales, hoping and praying they don't cancel on Monday morning, like because you've got them to internally persuade themselves, you know they're not going to cancel. So it just makes selling way easier and enjoyable, and you make a lot more money. It's nice making a lot more money than not so much money.
Yeah. So what is what's hopium?
Hopium, it's a drug that salespeople take Thank you for bringing that, where they hope and pray something they're going to say or some slide 46 on their 90-minute slide deck is going to magically cause the prospect to want to buy from them. And we call that hopium. It's a drug that's just a hard and unpredictable way to make a living. Like if you want to make a lot of money in selling, you have to learn how to get the prospect first to let their guard down and keep it down, and how to get them to feel comfortable enough to emotionally open up and go below the surface. Like I said, what's the biggest emotional driver in a human being that causes them to want to change? It's pain or the fear of future pain. That's why the laydown sales buy from you all the time. We're not training you how to sell the laydowns. As my friend Brian Tracy would say, every blind squirrel eventually finds a nut. We're training you how to sell to the other 95%. That depending on your sales ability depends on which side of the fence they fall on. And when you learn how to communicate to every type of prospect, selling becomes pretty easy. Make a lot more, you get to help a lot of people. It's a lot of fun.
I know you've got to go quickly, but I need to ask you this, two more things.
Yes.
You've covered it, but why did you call your podcast Closers Are Losers?
Two reasons. Number one, it's a big hook because it gets salespeople, like you said, that have high egos. Like, I'm not a loser, I'm a closer. So they tune in because they're like, what's this guy all about? And when they hear us, they're like, that makes sense. I never thought about it that way. It's like a paradigm shift, right? It's like the Matrix. It's like, you want to take the blue pill or the red pill? We're okay if you keep taking the blue pill. But if you want to take the red pill, things can open up for you a lot. That's number one. So that got us, you know, we're already at like, couple hundred thousand downloads a month now after a year and a half. So it's a big hook. And number two is we don't really, when we train salespeople, we don't want you to view yourself as a closer, okay? Because you start to act like that. You know, I'm good friends with a world-renowned hypnotist. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. I follow him on Instagram. It's called Max Major. Mm-hmm. He's got a show in Vegas. He's been on America's Got Talent, world-renowned hypnotist. And he talks about when you use words over and over and over, guess what your brain does? You hypnotize yourself to view yourself in that way. It's just like an actor, like Leonardo, hypnotizes himself to act like the part he's playing, right? Mm. He goes through and he acts like he's not Leo, but he's that character for weeks and months up until he films it. That's why it becomes who he is, right? That's why they're so great. So when you call yourself as a closer, 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 I need to get better at pitching, you are automatically telling yourself that. And how do you view closers that are closing you? How do you view salespeople that are pitching you? In a lower status. So when you view yourself that way and you say, I need to get better at pitching, guess what happens? When you go into your pitch, because society views it as a negative thing and you view it negatively when people pitch you, guess what happens to your mind? You have more anxiety and you get more nervous because you feel like you're doing something bad. So rather than pitching, I'm going to say, I need to get better at my presentation. I need to get better at my call to action. See how that's more neutral? Same thing, but more neutral. And instead of a closer, I'm now a problem finder and problem solver. I help prospects find problems they didn't know they had, and our solution helps them solve those problems. And when you start to hypnotize your brain that way, you come across more collective, more relaxed, still assertive, but more viewed like an expert is viewed or somebody who's a trusted authority. That triggers massive trust in the prospect. So be careful of the words you use because they become who you are.
Jeremy, my last question is this. When I started my first ever brand when I was younger, I was trying to keep salespeople, predominantly men, young alpha men, motivated and consistent throughout the day. So I come up with a mantra, and this is the mantra. Be happy, never content. Now, right. I've got my own interpretation of what that means, but if I were to ask Jeremy Miner, what does be happy, never content mean to you?
Never content to me means never settle for where you are. You're always learning. You're always advancing. You're acquiring new knowledge. What is the biggest expense in your life as a human being, especially as a salesperson or a business owner? The biggest expense in your life is your lack of knowledge. That's it. Let's say if you want to make $350,000 a year and you're making 80 right now, Your biggest expense is your lack of knowledge of not having the sales ability or skills. You haven't learned it yet to be able to make $350,000 a year. If you're only making 80, what's 350 minus 80,000? That's 270,000 a year. That is what you are paying life right now because you have not acquired the right knowledge that it takes to be able to make 350 grand a year as a salesperson. So it's never being content. It's always learning. It's always improving. It's always moving forward, not moving backwards. In my mind, it's never being content where you're at. Who cares about awards you won 10 years ago? What are you doing today to progressively move forward? That's our motto here at Seventh Level.
Perfect answer. Thank you very much. Really pleasure to meet you over Zoom. One day, hopefully, we get to meet in person.
I know we didn't have a lot of time to go through questions as far as like what questions to ask for different industries. So if any of your community wants to learn some of those questions, they are welcome to join one of our free Facebook groups. We can send you the link. Have them go to, let's have them go, we have a bunch. For your audience, let's have them go to salesrevolution.pro, salesrevolution.pro. There's about 90 some thousand salespeople in there. And we go live in that group 2 to 3 times a week, different Q&As, different questions, different trainings we do, different industry specific. So they're welcome to join that free Facebook group. If they want to start learning, we'll give them some nibbles in there. And if they ever want to get into like advanced training that's industry specific, just have them reach out to us in the DMs and somebody on my team can go through different programs if they want to get to that level down the road.
You're the man.
And here's the book. Here's the book. They're welcome to get the book. If they need a GoFundMe page to fund the $17, just let me and Steve know. We'll get you a GoFundMe page. If you want to sell more, they can go to barnesandnoble.com here in the States. If they're over in the UK, I believe it's sold in most major bookstores in the UK, or they can just get it on Amazon, new model of selling, all right?
It's absolutely worth every penny. Thank you very much, Jeremy, and we'll stay connected, bro.
Pleasure being on your show, Steve.